Silence.
Oppenheimer.
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Right Radio.
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 122 of Nerd Pride Radio. 122, the oldest recorded person to ever live was Jean Calment of France, who lived 122 years and died in 1997. So as I'm looking up this fact, I also wind up looking at a picture of Susanna Jones of Alabama, who is the current oldest living human being. And in these pictures, she just looks pissed off. I mean, like, there's cameras and microphones being shoved in her face, and there's some perky 21-year-old intern presenting her with some sort of official certificate. And she just looks annoyed with the whole thing, because, I mean, essentially, you know, this big old hoopla and celebration, and, ooh, look, an official certificate as the oldest living human being. And her accomplishment is, yeah, I didn't die. Yeah, you're thanking me for not dying. Good job not dying this year. Awesome work. Which is similarly, my grandmother-in-law's sister. So my wife's great aunt, Sister Cecilia. She was, while she was alive, was a Catholic nun and really cool woman, Sister Cecilia. But I remember going and celebrating her jubilee, her 50th year. As a nun. So it was her 50th year in the order, and we went to this big celebration for her, and, you know, and it was cool, and all the family got together, and it was really nice all being together like that. But, you know, part of the back of my brain, I'm just thinking, yeah, you know, all we're doing is coming here and going, wow, good job not dying. I mean, you know, cause it's not like she was ever going to leave the order. It's not like, I mean, this was her life. She was committed to it forever. And the celebration was, well, you didn't die. And it felt a little weird. And that's, and again, it was still a very sweet ceremony. We had a lot of fun. And so I'm not knocking it for that. It just seemed weird. But looking at the pictures of Susanna Jones in Alabama on her 116th birthday, and looking at her reaction to all this hoopla around her, I understand how she feels. I mean, basically, I don't get it. All I did was not die. Weird. So, yeah. What's up, Aiden?
Speaking of Suzanne, the weird thing is when she dies, there will be a whole new set of human beings than from when she was born.
Right. Right. No, and that's actually one of the things I was thinking of. That's actually right on. Because I was thinking, basically, when she gets that certificate, it's like, hey, congratulations, you outlived everybody. Every single human being who was alive at the time you were born, not just, you know, everyone you know, not everyone in your town, not everyone in your family, but everyone who was alive on the planet Earth at the time you were born, yeah, they're all dead now. You won. So,
Jesus.
Well, I mean, that's the contest, right? I don't know how it works. Hey, anyway, forget all that. Ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me.
How are you doing?
I'm awesome! My name is Mike Jones, and I am a D&D/Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus there's like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. Nerd Pride smells like a card game you've never played before, coming fresh out of the plastic wrap. Oh, that's awesome. All right. Did you have something, Noah?
But there are only 2 nerds that are also included.
No, you know what?
Aiden Jones and Noah Jones.
Are you sure you're a nerd?
Yes!
I don't know.
Oh, really? Well, then where's your nerd certificate?
Yeah.
Here!
Oh, well.
Apparently his
I stand corrected.
His genetics are good enough. Before I get further into the podcast, first there's updates. And the only update I have is I mentioned in the context of the Deadpool last week, I mentioned the band D'Antwoord, the South African rap group consisting of Ninja and Yolanda, who apparently also starred in the movie Chappie. I did not know that. Those nominations came from Kaz. And as a result of looking them up and trying to figure out who they were, my wife and I listened to a bunch of their music. We've now bought 3 D'Antwoord songs. And, wow, Kaz, thanks. I don't know if you're a fan of their music. I don't know if that's why you brought them up. I don't know what brought them to your attention. But, they are, I mean, it's hip hop. It's rap, but it's also dance, house music. They rap in 3 different languages. And, they're just odd. And again, the material is a little disturbing, a little over the edge. The videos are visually, as I said last week, visually very disturbing. But it's catchy. It's just, and that sound was Noah tripping over his own feet.
Noah was tripping over
a cage. Alright, he was tripping over the guinea pigs. Did you kill him? Are they dead?
No.
Oh, well, maybe next time. Okay. Anyway, Kaz, thank you for mentioning D'Antwoord, because again, my research has led me to buy some of their songs and I actually really like them. I mean, there's something, I don't know, something cool about them. So thank you. Appreciate that. But now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week, or it's also the time for my kids. They've brought some stuff to the table. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod, and the best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. All right, so straight into the master list. First off, Happy New Year! In honor of 2016, I'm going to open up with some uncomfortable topics. Okay, it's not what you think. I've got some stuff that's been lurking on my master list in my handy-dandy pocket mod that I'm just never going to get to. I'm just not going to do them. And they're all uncomfortable topics. So I don't know enough about some of these topics, or they're just too upsetting to talk about because they kind of send me off on a tangent and... you know, that's not what I want this to be all the time. I just, you know, basically I just don't want to do them. So, you guys know my unholy fixation on honoring everything on this list before I can cross it off. So, here...
I really don't want to do them, but here, why don't you do them all at once?
Well, I'm just going to give summaries of them without actually going into the topics. That's my plan. So, this is my official send-off for these uncomfortable topics that I just really want to cross off of my master list so I can start this new year with a clean slate. All right, first on my list, it says cultural appropriation.
Is that a to-do list? Or
it is, yes, this is my to-do list. cultural appropriation, the context of white people, mainstream culture, borrowing elements of other culture, and assuming it for their own. And I don't remember what I had to say about it. I don't remember why it was important enough for me to write down. It's something that's, in the news enough that I keep running across articles about it, but I can't remember why I wanted to talk about it. So check, crossed off, done. I don't have to talk about that anymore. I was also going to go on about online harassment. That's the next one that I wrote down. And under online harassment, I wrote down lady/tiger, because there's a lady at our zoo in Omaha who apparently got herself into the tiger cage, bitten by a tiger, whatever. But she was the subject of intense online harassment for being such an idiot. And or the same thing with the lion that got shot by Cecil the lion got shot by the dentist, and we had this huge internet hate campaign for this guy. There's all sorts of examples of this, and it got me wondering about whether or not that level of hate towards people, because man, we can get really hateful on the internet. Really hateful. Even when a lot of times we only know half the story, or we don't even know half the story. And thus, are we justified in the way we treat people online? Is there, is there some purpose served by that? I don't know, but I can cross it off now. The next one, do-gooders. Now, I don't know why that's an uncomfortable topic, but...
Because they're neckbeards?
No. When I say do-gooders, it was in a specific context of people who are compelled to do good for others, like so much so that they panic over spending anything on themselves. For example, well, I'd like to go out for ice cream tonight, but that ice cream, well, that's $6 that I could be giving to some needy person. That's $6 that could be buying mosquito netting for needy children in Africa. That's $6
are
that could be...
Are there people who do that?
Yeah. Yeah, there are people who become so obsessive about that they live like misers, paupers, so that they can give all of their free time goes to volunteering to help other people. All of their spare money above their bare subsistence survival, all of their free money goes to charities or causes or other things. And again, at the time I heard, I was listening to a podcast that featured this a couple times in a row, and the whole concept was just, I mean, yes, it's cool that people could be that giving of themselves, but part of it also seemed really OCD or pathological, and there was some sort of, you know, these people trying to find a balance between, you know, surviving and finding happiness for themselves and also filling this need to help others that they had. And again, there, I've explained it to you. Don't know what I was going to say about it, but it fascinated me at the time. Okay, next one. Man, I don't even know why I would write this one down. I mean, I know why I wrote it down, but oh man, feminism and abortion.
Oh, there's, wow.
I know.
Wow.
What was I thinking?
But look, wait. Magic moment. I'm picking up on the mic.
I know, weird, huh? So, I wrote down feminism and abortion because it was one specific article by a woman who considers herself a feminist. In fact, as she describes herself, she is right in line with almost every liberal left-wing sort of cause out there. She's in support of gay rights. She's a feminist. She falls in line with Bernie Sanders. I mean, lock, stock, and barrel on all of his topics. She is, you know, very much a left winger. The one point where she disagreed with this feminist viewpoint was on the subject of abortion. For her, abortion is wrong. Abortion is killing a life, and so therefore, that was her one area of disagreement. On every other topic, I mean, she, you know, it wasn't particularly a religious thing for her. She wasn't a terribly religious person. It wasn't a, every other way she lines up perfectly with your stereotypical leftist, except this one thing. And so she writes an article explaining what a difficult path this is to walk because, you know, people just assume, you know, when you say that you don't believe in abortion, people assume a whole lot of things about you that are not necessarily true. And the response to the article, and this was the thing that was, and this goes back to online harassment, the response to this article was nothing but a nonstop stream of hate from people calling themselves feminists and basically referring to her as a traitor or a fake or a phone. I mean, there was no one bothered to listen to her actual argument. All they saw is that she says she doesn't support abortion, therefore she's evil. And that was it. Therefore, she's evil. I mean, people even saying things like, you know, normally I say anyone who calls himself a feminist should be allowed to define that for themselves. But boy, this is a case where I want to make an exception and say she can't be a feminist. She can't be part of this. She can't support us. She can't. Oh, man, it was tough. And so, again, clearing the palate of this. It's just there's so much. You'll notice a lot of this is, you know, just internet fights and internet hate. And, I just need to get rid of this. I need to cross off my list because every week I look at it and I go, as I'm going through my list of what I'm going to put out here, I mean, this is like 6-7 weeks in a row and I get down to feminism and abortion. Nope, not doing that one. And then I move on. So now I don't have to do that every week because I know I'm never going to do it. So there, we can cross it off. Next one, this one I considered saving. This is about, Hillary Clinton and her attack on free speech. In the same week, this is right after the Paris attacks, in the same week, all the major candidates had to talk about what they would do about ISIS and what they would do about terrorism. and it's talking about stepping up their measures against ISIS, and particularly restricting the internet and limiting the types of encryption that can be used and this sort of stuff, because, you know, we need these tools to go after terrorists and protect ourselves. And Hillary, in talking about putting limits on the internet, putting limits on encryption, this is her actual quote. She said something about, you know, the usual complaints, freedom of speech, etc. I mean, it was so dismissive of, freedom of speech, whatever. This is a serious topic. That scares the crap out of me. I mean, I expected that from Trump. I mean, Trump's just been flat out evil. But to get that from the left as well, and to see how in step both sides are on some of these issues is just disturbing. I fear for our freedom of speech. I'm not going to go into the whole thing. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say.
Can you answer a question, though?
What?
How does a government regulate speech?
Oh, all right. By making it illegal to speak out against your government. That's how they do it.
Right. That part I've got. That's the part I have down.
Mm-hmm.
The part I don't get is, how do you enforce it?
Oh, by requiring that if we ask an internet provider to give us details of names and locations and all sorts of personal information, that Google or Yahoo or any other online service provider, if the government asks, we make it mandatory that they have to turn over your personal information to the government. Therefore, if you say something they don't like, if you do something they don't like, something that may be considered illegal, and you do it on the internet, they have the authority to go in and get your personal information and find out where you live and then charge you for it.
Oh, okay. That's internet speech, which is very easy to track. But real life speech, like what England tried to do.
Hmm. Okay, real life speech? For example, we have, according to our Constitution, we have the right to freely assemble, and we have the right to speak out against our government, and we have the right to stage public protests. But in the last couple of decades, it has become standard practice that, yes, you can absolutely come out and you can protest, but if you're going to do it, you have to do it in our designated protest zones, which, oh, by the way, are back and away from the cameras and away from the main parade of people. And so therefore you're allowed to protest, but you have to do it over here where people aren't going to see you unless they come seek you out. That's not freedom of speech. That's not our freedom to congregate. That's not our freedom to assemble and make a protest, because, okay, you can speak out, but if you do it where you're going to attract a lot of attention, where you're going to disrupt our daily flow of traffic and business, if you do it out here, we will arrest you for it. You can only do it where it's not going to cause anybody trouble. Well, that's not freedom of speech, and that's not what it was intended for. So, yeah.
What if I want to protest the protest zone?
Right. See, if you want to protest the protest zone, we have a protest zone.
Even further away.
It's actually just outside the actual protest zone, because no one's going over there anyway. So, you're okay there. But you can't go inside the actual protest zone to protest the protest zone, because if you did that, you might disrupt the actual protesters who are there to protest whatever it is, the Democratic National Convention or whatever they're there for. And I get that there are safety issues that, the presidential motorcade is coming through and you don't want just any rabble to be able to get close to the president because, you know, might get shot and all that. So they want to keep people back and they want to make sure people are safe. And anyone who might have radical ideas, why the Secret Service hunts them out beforehand to make sure they're not going to get anywhere close. I get why they want to do that. But again, you know, when it comes to protesting something like, you know, the Democratic National Convention or whatever, the idea that that's right. Nobody's ever protested Nerd Pride Radio. Everybody loves us.
Where would they protest?
That's
right outside our house.
That's probably true.
Oh, no.
But I wasn't going to make a big deal about this topic. You guys have dragged me into it. We're done.
We're not going to talk about it anymore. And then the last one I'm crossing off my list is store credit cards.
Ugh.
All right, one, store credit cards are mostly a scam anyway. But two, I just got pissed off because we were in Kohl's up in, where were we? We were in South Sioux City. Or no, we were in Sioux City. And yeah, there's a South Sioux City that is in Nebraska. There's a Sioux City that's in Iowa. And then there's a North Sioux City that's in South Dakota. So that one...
Wait, North Sioux City is in South Dakota?
Yes, because Sioux City itself, the whole major metro area, happens to sit right there where the three states come together. But anyway, we were in Sioux City, and we were at Kohl's, and it's Christmas. So everyone's doing their Christmas shopping, and we're waiting in this huge line, and it's taking forever because every single person that comes through, they start offering them the Kohl's credit card. And if you decide you want the Kohl's credit card so you can get 20% off right now, then that teller, that cashier, helps you fill out that form, and it takes 15 minutes while they fill out a credit card application right there at the register to put it through to give you your discount, and all the rest of us are waiting. I mean, we sat there with, you know, there were like three registers going. Two of them had people filling out credit cards. Oh, I mean, they're a scam already. But then to have the scam and to have it slowing down my Christmas shopping, screw you, Kohl's, and anybody else who does that stuff. Drives me crazy. But that, we're done with that. All right. That's the end of Uncomfortable Topics. And now it's time for my gaming table.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
Role-playing games, video games, board games, card games, any games, if it fits on my gaming table, I am here to share it with you. We did not get through all 10 of the new games like we promised last week, and I blame that on Aiden.
Whoa! Why on me? What did I do to you?
You obviously didn't make enough of an effort. It was your idea. You should have been organizing it. I can't believe you didn't take care of all this. So anyway.
I tried to give us time, and I had to work. I don't know what you want from me.
Having said all that, we actually played a lot of games this weekend. It was really cool. We played Them's Fightin' Words many times.
I won.
And it was spectacular. He won the first round. And
no, I won the first
round. Oh, no, that's right. You did not win the first round. Noah won.
I never said I won the first round. I just said I won.
Yeah, Noah kicked ass at Them's Fightin' Words. That
I
was
didn't
really
even have a stack.
Yeah, he never missed a trick. Not a single one. It was really cool. And, look, we played New Year's, and we also went out this last weekend to my in-law's place for the big family Christmas out there. And I brought along a whole bunch of games because I figured, if nothing else, I would entertain some of the kids by introducing them to all sorts of new games. And it was a blast. We had such a good time because, all right, we played Them's Fightin' Words, and we played that out at the Christmas as well. And it went over like gangbusters. We had such a good time. We got Grandma playing. We got a bunch of the cousins playing. Me, my wife. It was just a really good time. And I've always thought that Them's Fightin' Words would make a good drinking game. But then after playing this whole weekend, and we played a lot of Them's Fightin' Words, it turns out that I can barely remember like four terms in a row when I'm sober. I can't imagine what that game would be like if I was drinking. Oh, and
a lot funnier.
And again, for those of you who don't remember my millions of descriptions I've given of the game before this, Them's Fightin' Words is a game of cowboy insults where it's always, yes, it's you. Give me one. You lily-livered varmint. Okay, there you go.
Your name is Pamby, milk-drinking, son of a biscuit.
That's right. And then, by the way, my favorite card is Namby Pamby. And that's also, oh man, almost everybody got into it. When you play down your cards, you have got to read them off like a cowboy. Or at least whatever your bad cowboy imitation is. If you're not using your horrible cowboy voice, you're not playing the game right. To me, every time Namby Pamby comes up, makes me laugh. I love that card. But it's as each player goes around, you each add another card to the middle. So first it's you namby pamby varmint, and then it's you namby pamby lily livered varmint. And then, like a game of Simon, you just keep adding cards and you have to keep remembering all the other cards in that stack. The biggest stack we had, my nephew Caleb got this one.
He wound up, it was just me and him, we were the only ones left in the game, and he got seven cards, and like, yeah, seven. He still had them. I was thrilled that I got six, okay? I got six, and then I was laughing in his face, and he nailed seven without even blinking. And I'm like, you win. I got nothing. It was the very last one. I mean, he only had one stack, but for me, this was it. I couldn't take it anymore, so I was out. But Them's Fighting Words, awesome game, because anyone can play it. Games go super fast, super fun. Battle Sheep. All right, we just got Battle Sheep. I've never heard of the game before until Santa brought it to our house. Battle Sheep is amazing because anyone can play this game. All right, we had little kids, we had adults, and anyone can play the game. It's a simple concept. You've got an irregular board that you kind of have to fit together. An irregular board, and the board is different every game, just the shape of it. And you just start off with a big old stack of 16 sheep. And then you take off part of your stack, and you can now move it across the board in a straight line until it can't move anymore. And then that's where those sheep stop. So you can move half your stack, or you could move just one sheep at a time, or you can move all of them except one if you wanted. But you break up your stacks and you keep moving them around the board. And the idea is to occupy as much of the board as you can before the game's up. And if you can corral other people off and, you know, set up a blockade so they can't get their sheep out, so they have stacks that they can never move, all right, then that's, you're going to win on that one, because then they've got trapped sheep and they get less stuff out there to spread around. And like I say, simple concept. I mean, you can teach anybody. We had 8-year-olds playing, and we taught them the rules in, you know, less than 2 minutes. It doesn't take long. And the games play really fast, and everybody had a great time. And if you're playing with people who are adults or cutthroat little children, then you can get some really complex strategy going. It kind of will remind you of Othello in some ways or things like this, but it's just cute sheep on green pastures, and it's just fun. I can't recommend it enough. I'm going to take it to every family gathering because it's one that, again, you can explain in no time.
But the sheep stack on each other.
Yeah, and the sheep stack up the heavy pieces, so these heavy plastic chips that stack up really well. And, you know, you'd think 16 all stacked together would be a little unstable, but they actually hold up pretty well. It worked really, really nicely. But like I say, it's something that is fast, fun, easy to learn. I can't complain. To go right along with that, Zombie Dice, which we've had Zombie Dice forever. I am never going anywhere without Zombie Dice. That is my new commitment, because Zombie Dice, again, it's so simple that you've got, you know, you've got your zombie dice, and you roll 3 dice, and either you're going to eat brains, or you're going to get shot, or you've got people run away. So, okay, now you decide, do I want to keep rolling and risk getting shot and killed, or do I want to quit and just take the brains I've got and write down my points? I mean, it's really simple. But the idea of having to make that decision of when is it worth it to keep playing, when is it worth it to quit, you know, it plays into some real strategy there. And it's just fun and easy. Everybody loves Zombie Dice. And we, at one point, we had, I think, 8 of us sitting around the table all playing Zombie Dice at once. Man, and they kept begging me. They're like, oh, God, can we get the Zombie Dice out again? Can we get the Zombie Dice out again? Yeah, of course we can. Let's do it. We played Small World. We didn't take this one to the family gathering. Yeah, Aiden loves the Small World.
It's a small world after all.
And, Small World is just as awesome as I remember it. I was intimidated breaking it out because last time we played, Dave and Pat explained the rules as we went, and I didn't realize how much was involved in just keeping order in the box, because there are so many different pieces and so many little things to keep track of. But once we had the box set up, the box is really well organized with slots for everything, easy to find what you need. And once we got it going, oh, it was wonderful. I'm just so thrilled by Small World. It's like playing Risk, but fun. In Small World, you have a crowded map, not a whole lot of places to go, and so you wind up with all your races get out there and start spreading out, and you quickly eat up all the room on the board. And just as your race is really kind of getting out there, you start to die out. And at some point you realize, okay, it's not worth it anymore. I'm just going to put my race into decline, break out a new one. And so, you know, by the time we got done playing our game, I think we had, you know, between the four of us, we had like 9 or 10 total races that were still out on the board, all vying for space, crowding each other out. And it's just a ton of fun. Just a ton of fun. What I'm actually looking forward to is I want to play a two-player game, because they actually have 4 different game boards, depending on how many players you have in the game. So there's a small board with for a two-player game, and then you flip it over and there's a little more space on it for a three-player game, and then the big board for the four-player, or flip it over and you've got a five-player. So they actually have a different map for each number of players to make sure that you have just the right amount of crowding going on. So I'm actually really excited to do a head-to-head with just me and Aiden playing a two-player game. I think that would be awesome.
But see, my problem with a two-player game is, though, when you have like 4 or 5 players, it's actually strategy, but I feel with 2 people, it just comes down to the matter of who pushes harder.
Maybe. That's why I want to try it. I want to see how it works out. I'm excited for it. Small World, high recommend. All of these are, but God, we had so much fun. And then Castle Panic. We've played tons of Castle Panic, and we brought it out there because Castle Panic's a little complex, but it is so addictive. And sure enough, Noah, I didn't even play Castle Panic this time. We took it out to the family Christmas, and Noah wanted to break out Castle Panic so he could teach his cousins how to play. And I'm like, all right, I'll let you do it. So he got it out. He set it up. I stood there around the edges of the table for the first couple of rounds just to make sure they knew what they were doing. But Noah got them right on track, explained everything they needed, and they wound up playing, I think, 3 games worth of Castle Panic that night. They had so much fun with it. The first one, they lost. And I was so excited because even though they lost, they understood what was so exciting about Castle Panic, and they really wanted to play again because, man, they wanted a chance to beat this thing.
No. See,
and they did.
I've learned that's how you introduce someone to Castle Panic. You deal them a losing hand to begin with.
Yeah, well, that's...
And then you're like, no, I have to win.
Yeah, well, that's Kobolds, Pandemic.
Oh,
I
can't wait for Kobolds.
I know. Cardboard Fortress games, get off your butts and make me some Kobolds. What is wrong with you people? Seriously, just make the Kickstarter and I'll give you all my money. I'm ready for this. Oh, but anyway, we played a lot of games. We had a lot of fun. For this, I also brought along, Cthulhu dice, which I always have Cthulhu dice with me because I keep it inside the zombie dice container. And we didn't get to that one. I brought along Guillotine. We didn't get to that. Uno, just in case. But, God, if I had to break out Uno, I was not doing my job right. Not that Uno's a bad game. Uno's a great game. It really is. It's a classic for a reason. But everybody knows Uno. I wanted to introduce them to new stuff, and I did.
I haven't played Uno in years.
Right. Well, why would you when we have all these other choices? And I also brought along Pooh because just in case things weren't going well with the other ones. I mean, I like Pooh well enough. But it's not as complex or nuanced a game as some of the others. I mean, it is designed for kids. But I enjoy Pooh, but I really want to try some of these other ones, especially the new games that we got. And Resistor. I can't believe I didn't put speaking of Cardboard Fortress games.
Oh.
I'll get to that in just a second.
I won.
Yes, you won everything. I know. But I brought along Pooh because in case the games weren't quite catching on, Pooh is one that will get all the kids involved because everybody likes a card game about monkeys throwing poop at each other. You can't go wrong with Pooh. But Resistor, we played a lot of Resistor this weekend too. And Aiden kicked my butt, which it was just the luck of the draw. Really bad luck that I had.
Oh yeah, bad luck.
But I'm sure that the next time, and then he wound up playing with his cousins, but I'm sure the next time Aiden and I go head to head, eventually, you know, luck is always a factor, but eventually skill will win out and he'll see that I am the true Resistor master is what he will learn.
Oh.
So.
Whatever.
Oh, Resistor is so much fun. And the only drawback to Resistor is just that it is a head to head game. And so therefore, things like zombie dice and them's fighting words went over really well simply because everybody could get in. Once we started drawing a crowd, it's like, oh, you want to sit in? Come on, we'll deal you in. Let's go. And everybody could participate all at once. Resistor, as much fun as it is, it's much harder when you're sitting head to head with Resistor and people want to come over and look and you're like, oh, well, you can wait till we're done with this one. Yeah, no, it'll be about 20 minutes. You can have your turn. Less easy to work at a party, but God, it's a great game. So anyway, that's it for my gaming table. We will have more games coming up because I can't stop playing. This is so much fun. Well, of course, they're going to go back to school this week, and then they're going to have homework, and then they're going to become boring kids again. But, man, for this time that I had them, it was nice. So, next up, Roku! Yeah, Roku is just for... Roku is the box I use to watch all of my streaming stuff, so basically if it's television related, I watched it on Roku. So, my brother asked a Podomatic question about Bob's Burgers. I said I didn't know. I said I didn't even know if I had access to Bob's Burgers. As it turns out, it's right there on Netflix. In fact, when I flip down to my list of recently watched stuff, Bob's Burgers is just on the next line down. And it's been staring me in the face the whole time, and I just never paid attention to it. So I'm now 6 episodes into Bob's Burgers, and, oh, dude, awesome. Awesome show. Who's my favorite character? Oh, man. I'm partial to Louise just because I like Kristen Schaal a lot. But I think, ultimately, as much as I like Kristen Schaal and I like Louise's controlled or uncontrolled mayhem, as it were. I think Tina is ultimately going to be my favorite because she's just so dark and bizarre and just weird. I mean, they're all weird, but there's something about her absurdity that really is funny. But I don't know for sure. So your question was, who's my favorite character on Bob's Burgers? I've only watched 6 episodes, so I can't really say. I like them all for... Okay, I don't like Eugene very much. But Gene is actually... I don't like him very much. But in general, I like them all. So that's it. That was a short one. Now, next up... Oh, get the little ones out of the room. Make sure you're sitting down for this.
Nerd rage came flashing back. And I just looked at him and went... Burr!
That's right, it's time for some nerd rage. Alright, I got 2 nerd rages, one mine and one Aiden's. And mine, the first one, I'm gonna be really quick about this. Ticketmaster. Why the hell is Ticketmaster still a thing? Why am I shelling out money to some middleman to get tickets to events that I want? If I want to go see something, why can I not just call the venue? Why can I not just log on to their website and buy tickets directly from them and skip this Ticketmaster monster? Why are we inflating ticket prices for these people? In this day and age, it is not that difficult to get software to run your own ticket sales off your own website. Do it securely. You can have your venue laid out. You can have people select their seats and go through the whole bit with all your pricing tiers and however the hell you're going to do it. Include your local tax and your luxury tax and your whatever other bullcrap goes with it. And skip Ticketmaster entirely. Why do I have to go through Ticketmaster to buy a ticket for anything? I shouldn't have to. And my favorite venues, the best ones, are the ones where I can go to them because it's going to be little bars and lounges and small showrooms and places where, you know, it's like 400 people or 600 people. And I'm buying tickets to see awesome bands for, you know, $15, $30, $35. That's how much concerts should cost. And the idea that I go to Ticketmaster for anything, I want to go see, I go to Ticketmaster to see some third string cast, traveling out to the boonies to do their rendition of some, you know, big Broadway musical, and it's $135 to go see not even the main cast, just to see their, oh man, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. And it shouldn't cost that much to go out. It shouldn't cost that much to go see a live performance of stuff. And again, there's lots of places where I go out and I see live stuff. We see bands at county fairs, and we see bands at small clubs and venues in, not that we have any of them locally, but we'll go to Sioux City or Omaha or Lincoln, or something like that. And we'll see some really awesome shows, in some little clubs for almost nothing. We'll go see community theater and local theater and go see plays and musicals that cost, you know, $15, $20. That's the idea that I have to pay. I mean, again, when we went and saw The Producers, I enjoyed The Producers. I love The Producers. I like both of the movies. I like the play production. We saw it with, again, you know, it's a third string traveling cast and they put on a good show, but we had crappy seats way up in the balcony and we still paid over $100 a seat for that. That's ridiculous. And that was, I don't know, 6-7 years ago. I can't remember how long ago we saw The Producers. Among other things, we've seen other big shows, but boy, not so many lately. I would not, anyway, Ticketmaster sucks. Ticketmaster is the center of this evil, and it drives me crazy that we have to go through them. There are so many, I mean, like I say, these are tiny venues who do perfectly well selling tickets off their own website and not going through the middleman. Why can't other venues do that? What lock does Ticketmaster have on everybody's soul? I don't get it. I don't get it. They're not adding value. I mean, unless, yeah, is it just the convenience of having one place to go search for tickets? But I would call that Google. Look, it's just as easy to go search for tickets. How tough is it to find, oh, searching for the tour dates for something you want and then going to the venue and buying a ticket? How is that difficult? I don't, oh, man. All right, anyway. Enough of my rant. That's me. I'm going to turn this nerd rage now over to Aiden. So let me move this microphone.
I get to be angry?
Just this once.
Ooh, yes. All right.
If you get too angry, you're grounded.
Aw.
Just warning you.
Is it too late to give the mic back?
Nope. Get on there.
All right. What's really been getting on my nerves lately is reaction channels on YouTube. And I know what you're thinking. Aiden, you're having a problem with this? What kind of life do you have that your problem is with other people's work? Well, shush. What reaction channels are doing right now is they're taking other people's content and reacting to them, quote, quote.
Yeah, I was going to explain your air quotes because they can't see your fingers.
And they don't actually react. They just basically have a split screen. Half of it the video, half of it their face, and just sit there and stare at it for the entire duration of the video. Meaning that they're literally stealing content for money.
Yes.
They're literally stealing other people's money.
Yes. And that's, look, and I'm, let me pitch in with Aiden, because I'm completely with him on this. This theft of intellectual property, all right, I'm going to move this mic back. This theft of intellectual property bugs the crap out of me. I know it's the internet. I know it's YouTube, and it's hard to do anything about any of that. I get that. All right? But I'm with him. This is, we're talking about reaction videos where it is, you would think it's like Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is coming back, by the way, which going to have Felicia Day and Patton Oswalt as villains. There's no going bad with this one. This is going to be awesome. But Mystery Science Theater 3000 shows a crappy to mediocre old movie, and then you have the Peanut Gallery in silhouette doing commentary on this movie and providing real funny reactions and real funny commentary and making the whole experience better. And here's the thing about Mystery Science Theater 3000. They pay to do that. They pick movies that are either in public domain or that they can get licensing for cheap because, oh yeah, even with them providing additional content and them providing their own commentary, they're still using someone else's material in its entirety, and thus they pay for it because that's what you do when you use someone else's property. You pay the licensing fee or you make sure it's public domain. And so when you're watching a reaction video, God, please let it be the quality of Mystery Science Theater 3000. That would be awesome if they were providing content and commentary that made it more awesome or more fun to watch, but they're not. They're showing someone's material who is already someone who is funny, someone who has produced something. I mean, whether it's music videos or whether it's comedy.
Freaking PewDiePie.
Yeah, you're showing somebody else's YouTube channel and just basically putting your face next to it and calling it a reaction video. And guess what? Even if you provided a substantive commentary to go with it. I'm sorry, I'm taking over your nerd rage here. But man, you got me worked up. Even if you are providing substantive commentary to go with it, you're still using someone else's material and you're not paying for it. That makes you wrong. It's not that tough. But we live in an age where people put out someone else's music. I mean, they're essentially playing someone else's song, not playing it themselves, playing their version of it. No. They're just releasing someone else's music on their own YouTube channel, writing the lyrics over the top of it or doing whatever it is they do. Or maybe even sometimes it's just still photos of the artist in question over their own song. And then below it in the commentary, they comment that say, oh, by the way, I don't own this song. I don't have any rights to it. It is, you know, copyright, blah, blah, blah. And they list who it actually belongs to, as if mentioning that you don't own it somehow makes it okay for you to use it anyway on a YouTube channel that is getting ads placed in front of it, meaning you're getting paid for stealing someone else's copyrighted material.
But do you know the point I was going to get to way later in my argument, but you pretty much covered everything I was going to say.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're fine.
I didn't mean to take
it. But no, this is the part that I want you to get riled up about. You want to hear their counter argument? The reason why this makes this all okay and why they're allowed to do this? Exposure. They are giving those YouTubers and their videos more exposure.
Hold on. I need to pause this while I go look up an oatmeal cartoon. Give me a second. Okay, yeah, I just found it. Yeah, that argument, exposure, lots of people have pointed out that, yeah, guess what? I tried paying my rent with exposure. They wouldn't take it. Yeah, exposure, especially for an artist who is already doing well, yeah, exposure, my ass. You are full of it. The oatmeal, and if you don't follow the oatmeal, you should, because he's a funny, funny cartoonist. He's the guy behind Exploding Kittens. You've heard of the oatmeal. You know who I'm talking about. Huffington Post just flat out stole his material. As Huffington Post, by the way,
often does.
Huffington Post is horrible in that they, as if reporting that Stephen Colbert had problems with them. That they would link to, oh, Stephen Colbert really socked it to these people last night on blah, blah, and then they would just show his video. His video that is already online, already posted on his site, and they would just, repost it on their own site and, you know, yeah, sure, they give him credit, but, you know, that's copyrighted content, and they just blatantly stole it to put on their site where they are getting paid for ads, where they are getting paid for their traffic. It's just flat out stealing. Huffington Post is terrible. Terrible.
Have you ever seen the pictures of Huffington Post keyboards?
No.
It's nothing but a control, a C, and a V.
Nice. But Oatmeal had a cartoon called Control C is copy, Control V is paste. So if you're at Huffington Post, the joke is that your keyboard is nothing but copy and paste. So you can steal other people's material faster. Oatmeal had a cartoon, a funny one, about having a cat versus having a baby, and essentially why having babies is just terrible. He can't stand the idea of having a baby in his house. And so Huffington Post just flat out stole the Oatmeal's cartoon, just posted it up, I mean, and, you know, with appropriate credit, and told him that, oh, yeah, it's for the exposure, sure. So he went ahead and just replaced every image that they were hotlinking with an image that said, "Dear Huffington Post, please don't hotlink images. It costs me money to host these, and here's my monthly bill. Thank you." And then a copy of his monthly internet bill, which is over $1,000 per month for him to host the stuff that he hosts. And then even further, and this was the capper, is that the final images that they were hotlinking to, he went and replaced them with a cartoon of a guy mooning them. And it says, "Lol, I drew a butt." And then below that, a picture of a dick, and it says, "Huh, and a peepee." So, and so that's what Huffington Post had on their article every time someone went to it, was a copy of his bill, a butt, and a peepee. So, that's exposure. So, I'm completely with you, dude. I completely agree. So, anyway, are we done on that one? I think so. I just can't find where my recording is so that I can move on to the next segment. Okay, wait, there's the recording. There's my script. Did we have anything else we were doing before we get to the end? Oh, yeah. Okay. Pod people. All right. Do I have Pod People music? Yeah, see, that's what I do. No, get over here and sing.
Pod People. Pod People. Pod People.
See, I told you, every time I say Pod People, I want to sing it in Queen's Bicycle. Bicycle. Pod People. I don't know. That's just what happens in my head. Every time I say Pod People, I want
to
sing that.
I mean, it happened to me too, but...
I've never told Noah that, and my 9-year-old knows to do that because he's brilliant. I've raised him so well. Anyway, let me get the official Pod People music. Hold on. Okay, really quick, I have two new podcasts that you should listen to. One is called the No Sleep Podcast, which is a podcast that does nothing but read / perform horror-based short stories. No Sleep Podcast. Really entertaining. Most of the stories, some of them are a little predictable. It's you know, horror short stories, but most of them are really well performed, really well done, and very captivating. Some of them very disturbing, some of them thought provoking, but always fun. So you should check out the No Sleep Podcast. And then also, in a similar vein, except based on true stories, The Moth. And The Moth is a live show that performs around the country, and it's essentially they get people out of the audience. That, you know, when you come in, you put your name in and the kind of story that you want to tell, and then they just draw names out of the hat, and 10 people get to perform at each show who come up from the audience. And then they get judged, and the judging is mostly in fun, but essentially the people who do the best then get to go perform at some bigger competition until they get the best stories of the year. And Moth is basically the only qualification is it has to be a true story to the best of the teller's knowledge. And so it's people telling very personal stories about their own lives, and it is really fascinating. Most of them are touching, moving, teach a lesson in some way, but not always. But all of them are thought-provoking. All of them are interesting. And I've been enjoying both of these, No Sleep Podcast and The Moth. I've been enjoying both of these immensely. So if you're interested in stories, get on over there because they're a lot of fun. So now that is it for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. Therefore, it's time for the Pod-O-Matic. We don't have R2 here. This is so sad.
Well, where would R2 be?
He's in my computer bag. Where's my bag?
Where's anything?
Okay. Where's the D2? Hurry, we need your noise. Make sure it's... Wow!
Pod-O-Matic. Holy blueberries, this is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And because the kids are here and I've had so much material to do and we've gone so long, I have to admit that I've lied to you again. Last week I said for every game we didn't get to play out of all the new games, I would add one extra Pod-O-Matic entry to this episode.
Oh, you better not be lying about that.
Well, that would be 6 of them, and we don't have time for 6 extra ones over and above the at least 2 or 3 that we would normally do.
Why not?
So instead, we're just going to do some Pod-O-Matics, and then we're going to get to listener betrayal, and then we're all going to go to bed. So, the first number we have is 82. 82. And 82 comes from, at least I had this list ready. It's from Ronster. Ronster says, if one of your kids wanted to go into the U.S. Air Force to be a pilot, what advice would you give them? I would say go talk to your grandfather, because my dad was in the Air Force for 29 years, and
He was not a pilot because his eyes weren't good enough, but he was a navigator, and he excelled in the Air Force. He did very well for himself and for us. He's a good man. The U.S. Air Force was wonderful for him and for our family. Not my thing, not my bag, but if one of my kids decided that they wanted to go into the military for whatever reason, then, you know, more power to them. I would fully support them in that. And if they wanted advice, I'd say, go talk to your grandfather because, well, he did this forever and he would love to talk to you about it and he would love to give you advice and he would love to prepare you, for the kind of life that you're choosing to live. Other than that, I don't have any advice myself because I don't have a whole lot of experience with it other than vicariously through my dad. And since the original source is available and thrilled to talk about it, let's go to him. He'd be the good one for it. 74. Because you're planning on joining the Air Force, right, Aiden? That's a no. 74 is from... It's from Kyle. Kyle says, who would win in a fight? Stephen Hawking... or Paul Prudhomme? Assume Paul Prudhomme is still confined to his rascal scooter. Clearly Paul Prudhomme. He outweighs him. I mean, he's at least, what, 4, 5, 12 Stephen Hawking's? I mean, on weight alone, I mean, look, one has use of his arms and the other one doesn't. I'm pretty sure Prudhomme's got this one. I mean, what's Hawking going to do? Logic him to death, you know, it's just not gonna.
Hey, you might.
Yeah, it's not gonna happen. As much as I love Stephen Hawking and I have a lot of respect for the man's abilities, he is a genius. He's not winning in a fight, at least not a physical fight. Although that would be pretty fun to watch the wheelchair and the rascal bump into each other for a while, wouldn't it? It would be, you know what, I'm going to move on before I say something that's going to get me in trouble because I'm sure that there's something really wrong about this whole proposition. 46. 46 is, there it is, it's from Mrs. Darks. Mrs. Darks says, the musical Hamilton seems insane, yet it's a huge hit. Pitch us a crazy musical concept and tell us why it would be cool, Aiden.
Waiting for Godot.
Waiting for Godot as a musical. How much you want to bet if I search for Waiting for Godot the musical, it's been done. Hold on. Let's go look. And there it was. Because of the way everything's wired up right now, I couldn't get any sound out of it without having to shut down the recording. So therefore we couldn't hear the music. But it did come with jazz hands. Waiting for Godot with jazz hands, it just looks awesome. So, whereas Aiden says it's an abomination and he refuses to participate, come on, jazz hands. All right.
In Waiting for Godot, it's a mental piece. You have to think and you have to watch and...
So you're saying people who like music don't think?
No, I'm just
saying, I'm pretty sure Pat and Dave will have a lot of problems with that, man.
I'm just saying that...
They're your friends, no, and you're just insulting them to their faces.
All I'm saying is that if you're an intellectual who happens to like musicals, your chances of being a serial killer are really high.
Stop that. Okay, my own pitch is... I'm going to make an easy one, honestly. Firefly the musical, only because... Oh, please, because you know... Joss Whedon is just dying to write that. If he could come, because he did musical episodes of Buffy and Angel. He wrote Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. The man loves putting his stuff to music. He would love to make an all-musical episode of Firefly if he thought he'd get away with it, if, you know, Firefly were still a thing. So, you know what? And I'll bet you if Firefly had ever gotten to season 3, I bet we would have seen the all musical episode of Firefly. So, that's the one I'd be shooting for.
All musical Star Wars?
Yes. Noah says we should do a musical of Star Wars. Which Star Wars?
I'd say the one where they fight Emperor Palpatine.
Okay, so you want...
And while they're fighting, they sing.
All right. Oh, you know what? I think that would be awesome. If we did Return of the Jedi as an opera, I think that would be brilliant. I'm with you, man.
You shall not win.
That would be awesome.
Acapella lightsabers.
That would be.
Wow.
All right. See, we're all on board. Oh, look at that. There goes the dice. It's a 99. That's pretty impressive. All right, 99.
So that's almost 100.
Almost. If only it could be. 99's from Kyle. And Kyle says, what's the last board game you played? How was it? The last board game I played was Battlesheep. And it was amazing, as I already told you. And before that, it was Small World, which was also amazing. This is really kind of cheap because you're asking a question that just coincidentally I happened to just tell you what happened. So, you know what? Let's go ahead and move on. 62. 62 comes from... That's not even close to 100. Well, relatively speaking, it depends on your viewpoint, I suppose. 62 is from Ronster. Ronster says, what kind of tool, gadget, or such item would you buy but can't justify spending that kind of money on it? What kind of tool or gadget do I want to buy but can't justify spending that kind of money on it?
A waffle iron.
Oh, man, a waffle iron. Yeah, and they're not that expensive. You know, for me, when it comes to gadgets, like I'm thinking kitchen gadgets and stuff like that, for me, it's not even money that's the limiting factor. It's the space in my kitchen. There's so many things that would be cool to have, but, you know, where am I going to put it? What, do I need, like, a special room in my basement, and I go down there to fetch the waffle iron and the juicer and the I don't even know what else I would want. Oh, although we have decided we do want the Wolverine claws that you can use to shred chicken, because those are just really cool. But tool, gadget, or other such item. Man, I don't have a good answer on this because I'm a simple man. A simple man with simple... you know what? I want the hanging microphone. That's what I want. I want a ceiling-mounted hanging microphone that it needs to be able to swing away into place so that it's unobtrusive when we have guests over because, you know, I'm just recording out here in my living room at the dining table. So it's not like, so it'd have to be able to be unobtrusive and yet be able to swing out and hang down here so I'm not bumping against it all the time. And yeah, okay, it's going to be hundreds, maybe thousands of dollars to get this done, but that would be my dream. But I'm not gonna, I really can't justify spending that kind of money on it. It's a, well, you didn't want to go to college, did you?
No, I'm good.
See? Alright, I guess I can do it. Next week's recording is gonna be awesome.
I will throw you if you spend my college money.
Alright, you ready? You ready?
Yeah.
This'll be number 6. This'll make up for all the games we didn't play. 59. 59 comes from Humongous. Have you ever used a dice tower? Nope. I love looking at dice towers. I think they look awesome. I love the idea that they will randomize your dice rolls and keep them contained in that damn tray so that your dice don't go spilling over onto the floor.
Dice towers.
I don't have any problem. Yeah, dice tower. It's a, imagine a square tower and it's got little platforms, little ramps, so the dice roll down here and then down there and then down here and then they spill out into the tray. And so that way, when you throw your dice in the top of the tower, they get randomized, and then they come out in the tray at the bottom, so there's no cheating on the roll, and you don't lose your dice because they don't go rolling away on you. That's a dice tower. And you can actually make them yourself, or buy them relatively cheap.
How do you cheat on a roll?
Just drop the die.
Lots of people have tried I've seen people who pick it up, they have it in their hand in the configuration they want, and they just kind of, they only lift it up about an inch and then let it go and hope it doesn't bounce too much. Or just rolling things behind their hand or roll it behind the book or the screen so that, by the time, that they can see it, you can't, and they can kind of call out a number or they can adjust it before you can look, or there's all sorts of stupid stuff that you can do to cheat a roll. A dice tower avoids all of that. And also a dice tower avoids the garbage of it's cocked because you don't get a cocked die when it comes out of the dice tower because it doesn't land on top of your books or other pencils and maps and garbage. It also avoids the question of, you roll a 3-die 6 and you wind up with 2 6s on the table and then 1 die hits the floor. Oh, do you just pick up that 1 die and re-roll it? or do you pick up all three dice and re-roll them? Because what will invariably happen, one die goes on the floor, and if the two on the table are crappy, they'll just pick up all three and go, oh, ooh, sorry about that. But if the two dice on the table are good, then they'll pick up the one on the floor and leave the good dice where they are. And you need consistent rules, and a dice tower avoids all of that garbage. You know, we really ought to have one. Now that I've been talking about it, I've never thought I really needed one, but I think I've kind of talked myself into the idea. We really need to get one. So, yeah, we really should. All right, ready? Bonus Potomatic. 75. And 75.
That's almost 100.
Mrs. Darks, have you ever tried bubble tea? Nope. Have you tried bubble tea?
I had a chance to. I didn't enjoy it. I mean, like, I could do with or without it.
Okay, well, that answers part two of the question. If so, what did you think? Yeah, he didn't care much for it. So, there you go. We're all done. Let's bring out GLaDOS, and she will do a recap of this week's episode.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2016 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was Weezer's In the Garage and My Son the Astronaut by Oppenheimer. All of these songs are available on iTunes. You check them out, you buy them, you enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Want instructions on making your very own pocket mod? You go to pocketmod.com. If you want to do something nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends, because if you enjoy it, then spread the word. They'll probably enjoy it too. We're one big happy family here. Bring them all in. Kool-Aid party next week. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me, so don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Pod-O-Matic. Watch every week on the forums for and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. Oh, it gets harder and harder every week. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the very best way to talk to me, you come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. You sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Now it's time for a little listener betrayal. Before every podcast, I go ahead and go out on my forums, I go out on Facebook, and I mention that I am recording, and if anyone wants to contribute to the podcast as I'm speaking, I will read off whatever they have written for me. So starting off with my website, there's only one listener willing to betray me this week, and that's Lucy. Lucy says, back when you were first married, what is the best advice you remember getting? And now that you can look back, and reflect upon it, I don't remember most of the advice we got when I first got married, because I was smarter than everybody else and I knew everything, and so therefore I didn't really need to listen to anyone else's advice, and so therefore I probably didn't pay much attention.
Well, were you 17 when you got married? Jesus.
I know, it sounds like it, doesn't it? But the best advice about marriage that I can think of from early on, and I don't know if it's from before we were married or just after we were married, but the best advice was, hey, sometimes it's going to suck, and you just have to make the choice to work on it. You have to make the choice to love each other and be committed to each other, and even at the times when you fight and you might be mad at each other about God knows what, you have to work on it, and you have to make it work. You have to choose to make it work. And that is really the most valuable advice I have for new couples, is to know that, you know what, sometimes it's going to suck. If you go into it thinking it's going to be Twilight for the rest of your life, where you guys are going to make goo-goo eyes at each other, and it's always going to be this mad, passionate puppy love thing forever, it's not going to happen. You got to know that sometimes you're going to fight, and sometimes you're going to be really angry at the other person for who knows what. And you're gonna have to get over that. You're gonna have to choose to make things work and choose to talk to each other, communicate, and figure out what does work for you. And, you know, like any couple, there's always disagreements, but it gets a lot easier over the years. Now that we have kids, we can blame everything on them. It gives us someone to gang up on, I suppose. It's like if aliens came to invade the Earth, then suddenly all of us would unite together under one banner to fight off the invading aliens. That's what kids do for your marriage, is they give you something to unite against. I just keep doing this to get a reaction out of Aiden. He's giving me nothing over here.
No, I completely agree.
Nothing. No, but in truth, it always gets better. It always gets better. That's the best part. You know, you have your ups and downs, but on average, it's going to get easier year after year, and the love gets deeper, the respect gets deeper, the things that you share get better. It's just, I don't know. Anyway, I'm being all sappy. I don't need to do that. Next thing that Lucy says is, why do you love Maz Kanata so much?
Because Maz Kanata is awesome.
Maz Kanata is so awesome. She's
whoa.
DM,
do you know who's more awesome?
DM Dark's level of awesome. That's exactly what I was going to
say. Okay, good. Yeah, I'm glad we're on the same page.
I like her because she's adorable. She's a smartass. She is really smart, really deep and insightful. Wisdom score off the charts if I had to put her into Pathfinder stats. I'm suspecting that she's Force sensitive without being a Jedi, which makes her unique in the Star Wars canon universe, right now. That's not entirely true because, technically Leia has always been Force sensitive to some degree, without being a Jedi herself. So I guess not that unique, but still, you get what I mean. She's something outside of the traditional Jedi. And again, it may turn out that I'm completely wrong. And maybe she's not Force sensitive. I don't care.
Maybe she is a Jedi.
I just think she's a great character. She is just this spirited, fun, clever old woman who just tickles me to no end. I just really like watching her on screen. I can't wait to see the movie again, for lots of reasons, but specifically to see her in person again. I just want to see her go. I think that's great. I hope she shows up in the next movie and the next. I want to see more of her. I think she was great. Maz Kanata in Star Wars The Force Awakens was just an amazing character. Just wonderful. She was my favorite Star Wars character ever. All right. That's it for Listener Betrayal on my website. Let's go out to Facebook and see what we have here to wrap up. Oh, there's nothing coming in here. Why is Facebook not refreshing for me? There it is. Okay, Bloom County. That doesn't help me. Let's see. How about down here? Aha. Come on. Aha. Oh, wow. All right. Wow, one more comment? This is amazing. Really quick, let me write done. And I have Nellie and Sarah Beth here. Let's see what they have to say. Nellie's is, hey there. I asked, do you have any New Year's resolutions for 2016? And Nellie says she does. She decided that she would take the first steps towards becoming a nurse. Wow, that's cool. I didn't even know that was on the agenda. Scary, right? She says. And I agree. Yeah. But how cool. I think you would really enjoy that. That's awesome. I commend you for making a plan and starting in on it. So she says, I plan on starting my prerequisites this summer. Good for you. That's amazing. Hold on a sec. All right. And then, now last week, I think Sarah Beth and Nellie were commenting on each other's posts, and I would hate to miss out on that. So, oh, there it is. There's one reply. Haha. Sarah Beth also says, awesome. Good luck. All right. Sarah Beth then, in reply to my post says, yes, I did as well, make a resolution. Mine are to finish KonMari method decluttering on the house and some financial stuff using the YNAB software, which is pretty awesome. Okay, I don't understand Pokemon, so I didn't get half of that, but it sounds pretty awesome. Decluttering is, wow. Yeah, what a noble goal. A noble goal. And, beyond me for the most part. I mean, I can declutter with the best of them, but, you know, half of my decluttering is getting rid of stuff that I really don't need anymore, and then taking the other half of the stuff I don't need anymore and hiding it in a different room so that I don't have to deal with it yet. And that's not really productive. Late posting this week, Mike. Hope that means you were doing really fun stuff today. Yeah, we've been doing really fun stuff all weekend. We really have. I'm sure you already did, but if not, tell us about your day. Well, yesterday was the huge family Christmas. Today we wound up, after church, Jacob showed up. He just got back from a trip to Chicago with his fiance, where they had a wonderful time. And so he got back just in time to meet us to go to lunch. We had Chinese and it was great. And then, we actually, today was less fun than it should have been, because then, we had to go through Aiden's senior pictures and pick out the photos that we needed, which, man, it was great going through him because he is such a good looking kid and photogenic, and our photographer was awesome and we have great shots of him. But, oh, what a tedious process to have to go through all those pictures 800 times going, okay, but now we need one for great grandma. Which one do you think she's going to want? And oh shoot, we've got to remember that there's one to go to the paper and one to go to the yearbook, and how many wallets are we going to need? And how many, oh man, too much calculating. We should just be able to sit there and admire his pictures, and that should be enough for us. You know what I mean? And then we went up to school and we did a little bit, and Eli got to go over and see some of his friends, and and then we waited around for him, and it turns out that he's just going to spend the night there.
Well, hey, they don't have school tomorrow. Expect it by now. After
well, I know you would think.
No, you know me. I don't think.
But then I came home and I got to record a podcast with my sons, who
the good
again,
ones anyway.
Yeah, with the two good ones, who again don't have school tomorrow, so it's cool to be staying up this late. Technically, we actually didn't start recording until after Noah's bedtime, even for a weekend. He should have been in bed before we started recording, but he gave me the puppy dog eyes, and he begged. I'm like, all right, since it's the end of vacation, you can stay up and do the podcast with me. So he did. And then, let's see. Sarah Bethan says, is tomorrow your first day back at work after the holidays? What are you looking forward to? What are you dreading? No, it's not my first day back, because I went to work for 2.5 days last week, in between Christmas and New Year's. So I've done some. But what am I looking forward to? I've still got some more gift stuff from Christmas to set up on my desk. Jacob just brought back souvenirs from Chicago. I have a really cool polished stone egg that I get to set up on my desk. And so I've got stuff to bring in. I actually have a new tool set that I got from the adult gift exchange at the family Christmas. And my tool set comes in a pink bag, because I'm sure it's intended to be a ladies' tool set. But it includes a lot of tiny tools, which are really, really helpful for working on computers. And since it is a pink tool set in a pink bag, no one else is going to mess with my tool set. That's the awesome part. Much like Sheriff Rick, our local sheriff who gives us tours of the station and the jail and all this when we go in with the Cub Scouts. He runs the tours. And Sheriff Rick carries a set of pink handcuffs. And why does he carry a set of pink handcuffs? He says, well, two reasons. One, nobody ever steals my pink handcuffs because nobody else wants to use them. And two, because criminals hate being locked up in pink handcuffs. He says, it pisses them off to no end. So that's why he carries pink handcuffs. So very similarly, I think my pink tool set is going to be fairly safe from pilfering at work. So that'll
because
be cool.
Screws hate being screwed in with a pink screwdriver.
No, but well, see, Yancey is the one most likely to steal my tools, and I think Yancey would actually appreciate a pink tool set. Because he's not, while he may present himself as a bigoted misogynist, he's not really. He just thinks it's funny to make jokes like that. But he's actually very in touch with his feminine side, and I don't think he'd give a crap what color the tools are. And he would be perfectly happy to steal my stuff. But since I broke his screwdriver, it's probably okay if he borrows my stuff. So anyway, what am I dreading? During that 2.5 days that I was working last week, there were a couple of things that I could have gotten on right away, but since it was a short week and all the people were on vacation anyway, I kind of put them off. And so now when I get back tomorrow morning, first thing, I got a couple of broken machines that I really have to go. I mean, I got to get a power supply into one and a new fan into another. And it's something that I really kind of got to do immediately when I get there. And so I'm really wishing now that I hadn't procrastinated on those, because I could have gotten them done. But I just, there was other work to do, and I put it off. So I'm kind of dreading that. But otherwise, it's going to be a pretty good day back. I'm not worried about it too much. And then that's it. Done. You guys got any closing things? Anything you wanted to say?
Yeah. It's over.
Yeah, that's it. We're all done. Say goodnight, Noah.
Good night.
Say goodnight, Aiden.
Goodnight, everybody.
Say goodnight, R2. That's the one.